Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
That's right, it's political commentary, and we've got David Slack this morning coming to chat to us about if there'd been no vaccines, what had happened. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Is it both of you there?
Oh, yes, it's Millie and Rosetta.
It's Millie and Rosetta.
We sound a bit similar.
Yeah, we do.
Hey, this is a nice new beginning.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, David.
I hope you had lots of fun. I reckon it's the best gig in radio.
Oh,
I think so. It's pretty good. It's pretty sweet so far. We're enjoying it.
It's great.
Excellent. Anyway, what if there had been no vaccine was the question I was asking.
Mm.
And, The reason for that was this was something I posted on the weekend because we'd had about a week of everybody opinionifying about whether Jacinda Ardern was going to come and account for herself, even though she'd made no sort of indication she was ever not inclined to do it.
Mm,
you know, the demonisation of her has just been gobsmacking, really. But anyway, we talked about that the other day, and I wanted to talk this time about the a sort of a hypothetical of what people seem to overlook when they talk about all of this, which is just imagine for a moment that, you know, the way things planned out had not panned out that way. You know, it was really impressive how fast they managed to come up with a vaccine for COVID. And in part that was because, and this is a little bit of a diversion, but I think it's worth mentioning, there had been work on mRNA for years and years going on. So the science was ready to go when they suddenly said, we need something like this now. What have you guys got? And they said, well, here's this science. And so off we went. And this was only because there had been money available for the kind of pure science or you know, scientific exploration
right.
that puts us in a position to do this kind of thing. Whereas we've got a government right now, as does America, that's saying, well, we only want to be spending money on things that are going to turn a buck right away. And, you know, right there is a demonstration of how short-sighted that is and what kind of peril you can put yourself in. Because the peril I was getting at with that was, imagine if you hadn't been able to provide that vaccine, which we got within a year or so, and you might also recall everybody was, a lot of people were grumbling about how we seemed to be halfway down the line when, for some reason, New Zealand should have been at the front. I'm not quite sure why that should be, but all the same, before long, you know, it was getting into most of our arms, apart from the ones who'd got swiveled-eyed or gone down the rabbit hole or started telling each other people bullshit about the big state wanting to mind control and all of the rest of the stuff that's just gone completely out of control. And, which I might add, has propelled a lot of why we're having the kind of discussions we're having now, which are not what you would want to have in an inquiry like this, which is, you know, how did this all go? What lessons have we learned? But rather, what shadowy figures were behind the scenes pulling the strings, and how can we pull them before a trial and put them in a show trial and punish them?
So do you think the inquiry is like heading down a bit of a funny road? It's not really like a true reflection.
I think that it's not as bad as it could have been. You know, I think you've got people who are involved, who have enough of a respect for the process of inquiry and respect for the facts. That means that the whole thing's not going to go completely off the rails, but it's nonetheless, the intent behind it looks a lot more like trying to find scapegoats and heap blame on them and invent your suspicions than get us to a better understanding. But, I should just explain that the reason I was saying all that was about the no vaccine was because I just think when we have this inquiry, we sort of forget what it might have been like if we were 5 years in now and we hadn't had that science and if we hadn't had that vaccine. You know, you would have had people who would have had to go on in some form or other working, because at a certain point you find, well, you know, we've got to feed one another, we've got to sustain one another. Mm. And so we'd have contrived some way of doing it. We'd have probably been a lot more masked, but we'd have also had a lot more people getting sick. We'd have had a lot more people dying. We'd have been getting more and more wretched as we realized that we had this thing and there was nothing we could do about it, or there appeared to be nothing we could do about it. And, you know, for those first few months of lockdown, we were getting along, for the most part, really well. Mm. But as time went on, and especially when it got sort of broken into a divided operation where you had Auckland locked down for a long time while the rest of the country wasn't, I reckon that really stoked a lot of resentment, because people in Auckland could see what was happening in the rest of the country and thinking that they were somehow being treated unfairly because of that. You know, when we're all in it together, we're good. When it feels as though we're doing more than someone else, we get grumpy.
Yeah.
And I think there was some of that going on. But, you know, if there hadn't been that vaccine, we'd have had a lot of people actually doing what they were had been objecting the government was making them do, that which is to say, stay at home. Because once it starts to become clear that this thing can kill you or lay you out, a lot of people would have cut themselves off or, you know, kept out of one another's way. It was only because we were told to do it that we didn't necessarily put ourselves through our own thinking process of how am I best going to protect myself here, and end up with the decision, well, I'm going to stay out of the way of people. And so that's what we probably would have had fitfully over 5 years, which means that our economy would have been in all kinds of bloody disarray. And that's before we even get to the question of would we have opened the borders back up or not, and probably the pressure of that would have been so strong that would have happened. And so you would have had all of those mutations of the virus streaming in just as soon as they were happening all around the world. There is one thing to bear in mind, and that is that with a virus, over time, it tends to find a way to move faster but get less deadly. And so over time, you'd have probably got to a point where you would not have the kind of death rates that they did in those first few months. And just, that's the other thing that we just completely sort of overlooked. Because we were protected from, insulated from that, we didn't have what you saw in London, in New York, in Milan, where people just died, where the hospitals were clogged, where there wasn't room for all the bodies, for God's sake. You know, it was bloody awful. And it would have gone on being like that for a good long time. And as soon as it got in here, we'd have started, and in the absence of a vaccination, we'd have been seeing some horrible death numbers. You know, it's hard to say for sure, but you can probably confidently say there would be some tens of thousands. And at that rate, everybody knows somebody who's affected. And it would have been, if people think the national mood was poisoned by being locked down, they should try some of that shit. That's all I can say.
Do you think we saw other countries' responses, you know, that were a lot more lax, like kind of come on out and just, you know, get the virus? Do you think we saw that sitting here in New Zealand in lockdown, which, you know, was really challenging for certain people? Do you think we looked at that and got a bit kind of envious?
I think there was some of that. You had people, especially looking at Sweden, where they got very theoretical about it. So they go, no, we can really just go for the doctor here. And they paid a high mortality price in the end for that.
They did.
But while you're watching it happening, you're thinking, oh, well, yeah, maybe we've got it wrong here. And especially people who fretted that they weren't making the money they had been. And who in every other respect were living a perfectly normal life, kind of felt that they were being constrained and impeded and told by a communist prime minister what they should do. and they blew it out of all proportion. You know, if you look at, say, the UK, where they could never quite make up their mind whether they wanted, like a cat that doesn't know whether to go in or out. they would say, oh, we've got to look after business. So everybody go to the pub. Then, oh, Jesus, everybody's got COVID. Go home again. And that went on for months and months and years, because Boris Johnson is a strange sort of leader to have at a time like that, and it was a mess. And I tell you what, we were in London a while ago, and we were walking along the... I knew that the small memorial was there, but I'd quite forgotten it was coming up as we came down the South Bank. Suddenly we were at the memorial wall where people have all just written the names of their loved ones who died. And it's, you know, something like 160,000. Jesus, you should see what that looks like when you're actually walking along and looking at all these names. Not all of them written in just very tiny, you know, ordinary handwriting size. So it takes up no space at all. But with hearts, red hearts. And you just go on and on and on and on along this path. And it absolutely stuns you.
It's devastating.
It bloody is, because you think about every one of those deaths, what that means, how much that will have meant to a family and to friends and the tens, maybe hundreds of people who are affected by that, and then extrapolate that through 160,000 of those. It's you know, we just don't realise how lightly we got off this thing.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see the findings of this inquiry, because, you know, it was a difficult situation. You know, there was human life, there was financial stakes, there was kind of political stakes in some cases, you know.
Right. Yeah. And look, and I should I do sometimes forget when I'm saying this kind of thing that I forget to acknowledge that. Some lives got upended in all sorts of terrible ways. You know, if you live in the tourist business, the hospitality business, and the borders are closed and there are no tourists, that's really, really hard for you. And I'm not minimising that at all. It's just that nobody chose to have this virus. It was imposed on us, and we just had to work out the least worst option once that thing was in play. And I think we absolutely did.
Yeah, I mean, hindsight is a beautiful thing, and it's definitely important to have these sort of discussions, wondering how what it would have been like if we didn't have the vaccine, because it could have been a whole lot worse. It wasn't ideal, but it could have been a whole lot worse. So,
you know, I think the questions that we need to be asking are, how do we do better next time? Where's the optimal point between keeping people alive and letting them live? And how do we make decisions when, you know, the fog of war is so thick and the stakes are life and death? That's what we want to be getting out of that inquiry. We don't need to be looking for scapegoats or evil villains that don't exist. we need to be looking for a better understanding, because make no mistake, that's not the last pandemic you'll ever see.
No. I've got a funny feeling, David. Well, thank you so much for that. That was really enlightening, and thanks for getting into the nitty gritty of what we really should be looking at in that inquiry.
Lovely to chat.
Yeah, lovely to chat to you, David. Have a wonderful day.
I'll do the best that I'm looking out at this weather.
It's a bit dreary, isn't it?
Stay cozy.
I will.
Okay, talk soon. Right.
Cheers, Millie.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.